TV Break, the PopBreak.com's monthly roundup of all the ins and outs in the world of TV. And welcome to our new home in the Pop Break podcast feed. I am Pop Break podcast director Alex Marcus, and joining me as always is editor-in-chief of the PopBreak.com, Bill Botkin. How are you today, Bill?
Still recovering from our Bridgerton episode on socially distanced, but I think I'll be okay.
Yeah, well, listen, I just love that a C-bomb was dropped on that episode and that it was from the person you would least expect it from.
I'm still reeling from that.
Like, I but well utilized.
Believe. Yeah. I mean, yes, correct. But the most least likely person to drop it. And so casually.
She's got to come back on and do it every week for us. But in the meantime, making his triumphant return to the podcast after a month of Toranaga's newest interpreter, it's Pop Rig Podcasting All-Star, Josh Chernacki. Welcome back, Josh.
Guys, I need to join a union. This guy, not a good boss, I'm telling you right now. Works you to death.
He seems a bit careless in terms of his workers' lives.
What?
That is a little tease to Shogun, a show that we're not really talking about today, but maybe we will. But we also have lots of other fun stuff to talk about, including a new exciting turn in the world of the NBA. And also, we're going to book an appointment with the detectives over at the Dead Boy Detectives from Netflix, which is so exciting, and we can't wait to talk about that. And we'll talk about who won the month in streaming. But before we do that, Josh, you were away for a whole month. We haven't heard from you in so long. You had many, many hours of plane rides with screaming children. So I'd love to know what soothed your soul. What was the best TV you watched over that span of time?
Okay, so because I missed last month, I'm going to cheat. I don't usually do this. I'm going to give two, though. I feel like I've earned that,
it's okay.
Maybe.
Josh, there's been episodes where I've given, like, 10 shows, so you can give two. It's okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to say that, but.
That was definitely during quarantine where Alex is like, listen, I need to get this out of my soul right now. I'm going to give you everything I got.
You know what? That was our therapy then. We needed that.
Yes. I mean, it was.
All right. So, speaking of things that have maybe not been therapeutic, but that I've enjoyed, I have really enjoyed the first season of the Fallout TV show on Amazon Prime. I have not completed it yet. I'm, I think, 5 out of the 8 episodes in, but I have been really impressed. I have not played any of the games. I played some of the other games made by the company that made this one, Bethesda. They made Skyrim, which was a huge game 10 years ago or so. But I, even as someone who hasn't played these games, I think it's a really great show. I think it does an excellent job setting the world you're in. Just like the musical choices are so excellent for just kind of giving you a feel for the world. I feel like Elle Purnell is doing a fantastic job in what could be a very one-note, corny role, and is still kind of a corny role at times, but she's managed to give it layers. Walton Goggins, he looks like Wade Wilson, but he's pulling it off in the most Walton Goggins way possible. And I know, I think this show has given me, I think, undeniable faith that we have hit the golden age of video game adaptations. I think, like, behind that, when we had, obviously last year was big with The Last of Us. Even earlier this year, the Halo show for its second season had good reviews. Like, even now, like, the Knuckle show, not supposed to be great, but it's gotten positive reviews in a ways that I was surprised by. So,
is it?
It's
Did you forget Mortal Kombat came out recently? That was a hot piece of shit.
No, people actually really liked Mortal Kombat, and it got a sequel.
Did they watch it? Did they watch it? It was horrible.
Yeah.
It was the literal, it's such a terrible movie. I don't care. Well, I was so drunk watching that movie, and I still felt all the pain. It was terrible.
I think the sequel comes out next year, and I know people are very excited for it, so some people liked
it. Most people are dumb.
Well,
just saying it.
Listen, not everything can be as fantastic as Detective Pikachu when it comes to video game adaptations.
That's last true. Year we had, I think, was Super Mario Brothers the highest grossing movie last year? Or if it was, you know.
It was close.
It was one of. It was not the, but it was one of. Barbie had something to say about that.
Yes, as she would. Justifyingly so. But no, I think we are definitely in the golden age of that. Not all of them. Yes, you've got your Mortal Kombat's, and we'll see if Borderlands later this year is any good. But I have renewed hope for the world of video game adaptations that has very much not been there when we had the likes of Uncharted with our favorite Tom. He couldn't pull that one off as wonderful as he is. Just
well, I, it was better than I expected it to be. I had low expectations for that, and I enjoyed watching it. It was not good exactly, but I had fun.
What was your favorite scene?
Probably the one where Tom Holland is shirtless in bed with a little necklace on.
All right. Well, at least you got your standards.
Yeah. You can do that. Yeah. Also, there's a wild moment where like Antonio Banderas comes on, and it's like a spoiler alert for Uncharted. But there's a scene where Antonio Banderas gets introduced basically as like the big bad, and you're like, oh, I guess this is the villain. And then he like gets into a car and gets killed immediately. And you're like, wait, what is happening? And that was the coolest thing that happens in the entire movie. It happens like 20 minutes in.
Nice.
Poor Antonio Banderas.
So Fallout, you would endorse it. Bill, you saw Fallout. You did a whole podcast on it a couple weeks ago with Amanda Rivas. So that would be Socially Distanced, an episode of Socially Distanced on that.
I wrote a review on it too. This is the surprise show of the year for me. We talked about this a while ago on Socially Distanced, I believe. I was very apprehensive about this because the creative team behind it was the creative team behind Westworld, and that did us dirty so many times. And I was like, and then it's like, oh, let me guess. Like you have this heroine who's going to be this damsel, and then she's going to get like, she's going to be a death dealer, and then the man in black, and then there's this retrofuturism and all this stuff. And like, they basically, it seemed like they learned from their mistakes. And Walton Goggins, like Josh said, is so excellent in this, playing a dual role as the pre Fallout and post Fallout version of his character. Ella Purnell's
great. You
might
know her from Yellow Jackets.
Aaron Moten, who plays the character Maximus, I think has like such a hard performance he has to give, and he nails it. There's so many great cameos in it. The effects are great. The action's great, and it's surprisingly funny. And the humor is earned, I think, in it. And there is like, despite it being produced by Amazon, has a nice bit of satire about corporations running the world. The irony. But I highly recommend it, Alex. I know you were very much on the fence about this show, but I think, and I really thought about this long and hard, and I would have to recommend this to you. I think you would enjoy it. I don't know if it's going to make your top 10 for the year, but I think it's going to be above the Wandy line, above that Mendoza line of like good and bad. I think you would enjoy this series.
So
of course, in 6 months,
somewhere in
like,
my
you
top 50
suck.
Or so.
Well, I don't. It depends on how many shows you watch, because you watch like 100. Yeah. I went off. Sorry. I think you would like this. I think you would like it.
So, Josh, what was your other show that you wanted to talk about this month?
Okay. So, guys, I'm not going to say anything about anime this year, or this month, I should say. I promise. No
this
anime.
This year. Come on.
This year. That's too bold. I can't do that. I'm only human. So instead of talking about an anime, I'm just going to talk about a show that's based in Japan, because I have to talk about Shogun.
Nice.
Alex, you set it up earlier. Bill, I know you're not fully up to date, so I don't want to...
I know what happened. I just didn't get past episode 2 because it's just like I've had so much to watch over the past few months for multiple podcasts that every time I'd sit down and be like, yes, it's Shogun time, and then I immediately fall asleep. Like a jerk. I'd be like, Anjin-san. And I'm like, yeah, here we go. My wife's like, could you turn this weird show off? I'm like, all right, I'll do it.
I feel like that's more of a testament to you being overworked than anything else.
No, it is. It very much is.
It is a bit, it is often a very serene show, though. So I do think I could see it lulling you to sleep in a positive sense.
Yeah, yeah, it's very, very beautiful to watch.
Yeah, it's
but
gorgeous.
Josh, please tell us what you think about it.
Oh man, I
have you finished it?
I have finished it, and
okay,
those last, I don't know, like last 3 or 4 episodes are just devastating, especially the way that it just totally destroys your expectations. Episode 9 is probably one of the best episodes of television I've watched in I can't even remember how long.
Wow.
Yeah. Years for sure.
Yeah, just the way again it sets up so much that you're expecting, and then it completely pulls the rug out from underneath you in a way that doesn't feel like a a trick or doesn't feel like it is manipulative. It feels very earned because it's still based within the characters. And that even being when I don't think Toranaga's in that episode at all, or if so, it's like very briefly.
Not at all. Nope.
Yeah. So you've got like,
but he weighs so large in it that it feels like he's right there in the corner of the screen the whole time.
Right. Which I think speaks to like what a tremendous performance Sanada gives. And I mean, also the influence he wielded behind the scenes as a producer. But certainly like, Anna Sawa, like she is
unbelievable.
Out of this world. She like, she's been having like a phenomenal couple of years recently. I mentioned that I think in one of our, when we previously talked about this, how she was in, Monarch Legacy of Monsters. She was in Pachinko. She is going to get all the roles after this. Like her career is set and she's earned it. I mean, Mariko is my favorite character in this show by far.
Oh yeah, me too.
And it's not even, you know, like as much as I love, you know, Discount Tom Hardy, Cosmo Jarvis.
I thought you said Disco Tom Hardy, and I'm like, that's even better.
I mean, I would also pay money to see that. I hear that's Venom 3. It's just a disco movie.
Yeah,
it's just their tribute to Staying Alive and Saturday Night Fever. It's
great. Just you wait. That I promise you, just you wait. But but no, Shogun is amazing. Alex, I know you've caught up with it.
Yes.
How have you felt about the ending?
It's everything that you say and more. It's one of the best shows of the last few years, absolutely. It seems like it's going to be very hard for anything to knock it off the top slot for me in terms of best of the year for this year. It truly exceeded all expectations. It looks so beautiful. The craft of this show is outstanding. Like it, from an acting perspective, it's flawless, but the production design, the cinematography, the orchestration and scoring, the direction, everything top to bottom, the visual effects, there's actually a surprising amount of visual effects to make Vancouver look like feudal Japan. And it looks very convincing. There's like an incredible sequence involving a giant earthquake in the middle of the season that is just outstanding and horrifying. It's got spectacle. Yes, but the thing that's most incredible about it is that it's one of these shows that is just so, so smart about political strategy and about gamesmanship. And like, it's the person walks into a room and has a thing. They're saying one thing to each other, which is understood in the room to mean something else, given the cultural context of what they are saying. And yet still there is a third level of what is actually being said on top of that. And that's how like every scene is. It's so dense. It's so rewarding with the rewatch, and just it's a really, really special series. And I think the acting is just out of this world. And I agree with you. Anna Sawa needs to be a full-blown movie star. She is incredible on this show. She stole the show from all of these really talented performers. Episode 9 is just outstanding. And I mean, my guy Yabushube is just hilarious and so fun, and I love every single scene of him just constantly writing a new will every time he has to double cross the next guy just to stay alive.
Just so funny.
Excellent stuff. So I just found this show to be so, so much more impressive and artful than I was expecting. And I just like, I encourage everyone, including Bill, to watch it.
No, so this is like,
just turn it on at 10 o'clock in the morning one day when you are sick and can't go to work, you know, one of those days.
Yeah. I haven't had one of those in years. I actually teared up a little bit hearing you guys say that, because it was like such a special show for my dad. Like that you guys loved it as much as like he did. Like that, like I just to hear all that, I was like, it was amazing to hear. Like I'm just like, and like for me, the reason I've also held off is because I just want a whole week where it's just like, this is the only thing I care about and the only thing I watch.
Yeah,
and like really consume it. But people are asking for, is there a season two? There's not going to be a season two. There is no follow. But for people who don't know, like, I always forget Anjin's son's last name.
Cosmo Jarvis. Right?
Not Cosmo Jarvis, the actor, the character's last name. Disco Jarvis. Disco Tom Hardy. What they do is they actually follow his, like, family through different books, and they take them all over the place. Like, there's a book called Whirlwind, there's a book called King Rat, which was made into a movie, George Segal. There was a book called Noble House, which was a TV movie that like Tom Hardy, when he was four. No, this is like 1989, like Pierce Brosnan, John Rhys-Davies, they're in it. And that actually is more of a direct connection. It ties to like the Black Ships in Macau and stuff like that. So he's Clavell actually like has a whole like series of books that ties into like this family that's come from the events of Shogun. So it'll be interesting to see if FX adapts those, because they were, I don't know if they will, because they go in all different directions. They're all different times, different places.
So I think it's possible that given how popular the show is and how successful the show is, once it gets through its whole Emmy run is like in the limited series and everything else, I think honestly we could get a second season of this, because yes, the book, the Clavell book, is limited to just the story, but it is a story that's based on true history. So you could easily continue this storyline with a lot of these characters. And I think that given the structure of the show, given the way in which it uses its cast and how John Blackthorne ultimately factors into things, it would make a lot more sense to continue this story. One of the things that's interesting about this adaptation versus the 70s one is that he is very much not centered in it at all. He is at most the third or fourth most important character on the show. And
so much better.
And the finale has some pretty incredible moments in that regard, which I won't spoil for Bill, but Josh knows what I'm talking about. So I think that given how this ends, I'd be very surprised for them to be like, and here's that guy's grandpa. Like, that would feel weird. But who knows? Maybe they will. It's definitely a hot property, and it definitely exceeded expectations, I think.
Yeah, if they were going to make one, I think Noble House would be the one they make, because it's a lot of finance, business, and still that gamesmanship to like get into that sort of succession vibe. And I could see them, even if they did a season two of Shogun, like they could definitely be like, this is, you know, because we're all in universes and stuff. And technically this book was, so it's not like they're making it up. They could still, that show could still happen, as opposed to the other ones, which are like, one takes place during one of the world wars, one's in the Wild West. Like, Noble House, I think, would actually make a better series, perfect for FX, as opposed to the other ones.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those things where we'll hear more about it in probably a year from now, and we'll have a clearer sense of what's going to happen. But I can't wait to find out, because this has just been a huge surprise for me. Even though we went into this year knowing this was like one of the top shows on Bill's list, everyone was excited for it. It still really exceeded my expectations. It's the best thing that I watched on TV this month as well, like, without a doubt. And because we've just spoken about it for so long, I'm not going to continue talking about it. So instead, I'm going to give it a special shout out to a comfort food show that I've been watching that no one else is talking about. And I think that that's fine, because it's just a silly little trifle of a show. But I've really wanted to watch Ripley, and I haven't gotten to. I really wanted to watch this huge Netflix show that's had a lot of buzz recently, Baby Reindeer. Haven't gotten to it. But a show that I've managed to make time for every week, because it's just like soothing and comfort food, is a little show on Max called The Girls on the Bus, starring my girl, Melissa Benoist, who is from Supergirl, if you don't know her. Incredibly talented actress, very fun. She can do comedy and drama and action and everything. Here she is a New York Times-esque political reporter who is on the campaign trail with during a Democratic primary season, and it follows her and a couple of other journalists who are on the trail. There's an African-American journalist who works for a Fox News-like cable organization. There's Carla Gugino, who we all love, plays a sort of veteran cable news journalist who like is a sort of like Diane Sawyer-esque character. We also have a younger, like Gen Z sort of TikTok journalist who's trying to break into the field. And they become unlikely friends on the bus together. It's very soapy. Every once in a while, it tries to like make a profound point about politics, which is very not great. But most of the time, it just is ridiculous in a fun way, in a knowing way. And I really would encourage people looking for a show like that to watch it. If they're like, oh, a politics show, I don't want to. It really is so silly. Like, there's an episode where the bus breaks down in the middle of nowhere, Minnesota, and like everybody, it's like Lord of the Flies by the end of it. People are stripping naked and like try to kill each other over turkey sandwiches, and it's just like so ridiculous and funny. And so it's a really fun show. It's light. It's got a little bit of something to say, but not that much. Like, there's, like Mark Consuelos, a.k.a. Mr. Kelly Ripa. He plays a character who is, like, loosely based on The Rock if The Rock ran for president. So they're doing
wow
silly things like that. And, yeah, it's just, it's a lot of fun. And sometimes it tries to be serious, and those aren't the best episodes. But most of the time, it's very fun and very sweet and silly. And it's a great vehicle for Melissa Benoist, who needs to continue to get high-profile jobs, probably one a little bit more high-profile than this. This went through, like, crazy developments. It's produced by Greg Berlanti, who did all of the, you know, Arrowverse shows, in addition to, like, Brothers and Sisters and all of those things. And it was supposed to be, it was developed for the CW, and then it got pushed to something else, and then it moved over to HBO Max, and it almost died for a little while, and then it ended up on Max, and, you know, it's here. I don't think we'll probably get a second season of it, but I think it's a lot of fun, and you could do a lot worse when it's like, you know, 9:45 at night, and you're just like, I need to turn my brain off and just have something nice for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, because Lord of the Flies and people trying to kill each other or choke your turkey sandwiches sounds very light and just
no, it's very fluffy. Silly. It's slow motion, and they got, like, you know, and it's just, like, it's very comedic. I want to stress, it's very silly. Bill, you're up next, and my big question is it Bluey or is it X-Men 97? Which one is it?
Why not both?
Well, why not both? He's sarcastic. I mean, I did love Fallout. I like I said, I wrote about it. It's great. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend it, but it will be X-Men 97. I mean, it's just that great.
Nice.
I mean, I can't even go that much further into it other than if you haven't watched it. Don't let the fact it's an animated series stop you. Don't think it's this silly nostalgia blanket that all of us with gray hair just cling to because we like nostalgia. It's so much better than it has any right to be, and I cannot wait for it to get into its 3-part finale. It's phenomenal.
If you are enjoying X-Men 97, you can definitely listen to several socially distanced episodes recently where X-Men 97 has been discussed. And we do have a little podcast called Saturday Morning Adventures that I host with Kay Anderson of the Lost Spaces podcast. And we've been doing episode by episode recaps. They are kind of more like deep dives and recaps because, you know, I can't do something super concise. But we have a lot of fun talking about all the comic book influences on these massive storylines. And we have a really fun dynamic where Kay is, you know, he's hanging with me. I'm the eternal optimist. He's the gritty realist, and we're just bouncing off each other, having a great time. This week, in addition to the X-Men review, I introduced the Tortured X-Men Department, because, of course, it was the Tortured Poets Department Taylor Swift album, and I decided to honor it on the podcast by taking all of the main characters of X-Men 97 and pairing them with a song off of Taylor Swift's new album. So if you're interested in that, you can listen to that episode to hear. And that episode also comes with a link to our Spotify playlist with all those songs on it. So,
Alex, how did Kay react to all that?
Kay, not a huge Taylor Swift fan, indulged me in a way that I think would be fun for people who like her and who don't have much opinion about her. So I'll leave it at that.
God bless.
Okay, well, we're going to now take a break to listen to some words from our other friends on this brand new podcast feed called The Pop Break, which you can listen to on all major podcast platforms. That's right. We have every single one of our shows except for Socially Distanced and The Winner Still Is and the Way Too Early Oscar podcast. Outside of those three, every single show from thepopbreak.com is coming in-house to this new feed called The Pop Break. If you subscribe to Pop Break TV, you don't have anything to do. We just changed the name. If you subscribe to our old podcast feed, Pop Break Today, you're going to want to subscribe to Pop Break to get access to all of those shows moving forward.
Hey there, this is Aaron.
And this is Josh.
And we're the hosts of the Anniversary Brothers podcast.
The podcast where we talk about the anniversaries of your favorite TV shows and movies.
Including the ones you forgot existed.
Ugh, especially the ones you forgot existed.
And the ones that make you feel old for remembering.
Those ones are my favorite.
Episodes drop every other Thursday on the Pop Break podcast feed.
Don't you forget it.
So please join us for two trips down memory lane every month.
And we'll see you soon.
Hey, it's Bill Bodkin, editor-in-chief of thepopbreak.com. Join myself, Amanda Rivas, Al Manarino, and a cavalcade of awesome guests on the socially distanced podcast, the flagship podcast of thepopbreak.com.
And it's Amanda Rivas. If you're a pop culture obsessed nerd like we are, then you need to make socially distanced an integral part of your life. We talk all the things, Marvel, Star Wars, you know, everything on Disney Plus pretty much, as well as the hottest trending shows and news in the world of pop culture.
This is definitely Al Manarino and not Bill Bodkin. So listen to the Socially Distanced podcast every Friday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all your favorite podcast platforms. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe so we can eventually get Disney Plus to give us advertising money. Please, we could use the money. I have children.
Now it's time to move on to the biggest story in the world of TV, because it's time for us to do our Newsbreak segment. This month, we have another Amazon news story. Last month, it was all about Mr. Beast and his game shows. This time, it's about the NBA, because The Athletic recently broke a story that the NBA has a framework deal in place with Amazon to secure a substantial slice of the broadcast package, possibly including some playoff games. Now, that was the story that we were prepared to talk about, but late breaking was also Puck. Specifically Puck reporter John Orand, that ESPN and ABC have also secured a framework deal for some major NBA games, including an exclusive extension of the NBA Finals for another 10 years. So guys, we have a lot of stories over the last year or two about streamers breaking into sports, overspending to get sports rights. Amazon has obviously been doing this with the NFL. Peacock has been doing this with the NFL, right? We got a lot of stories about how Warner Brothers Discovery is trying to hold on to these rights, trying to launch their own service. We got that kind of like sports Hulu thing happening, maybe still, maybe not. Obviously, streaming is the future when it comes to sports. But what do you make of this specific news that the NBA deal might be between Amazon and Disney exclusively, and Warner Brothers Discovery might be getting the boot? Josh, what do you think?
I think our good friend David Zazzy Pants is crying in a corner somewhere. You know, it's about time. He's had his due. I think it's a big deal. I do think it's a big deal, mostly because Amazon has shown that they can be a solid provider of sports via streaming. Their run on Thursday Night Football has probably been the best streaming platform delivered sports package we've seen so far. I mean, yes, we've had, you know, Peacock and some other ones kind of try to do their best, and they've been fine, but Amazon has consistently hit like their goals, consistently been popular. So I think, and everyone has, you know, their Amazon Prime that they forgot because they had to pre-order, you know, toilet paper in 2 days because they were running out. So as you guys talked about with Mr. Beast, like if there's a place that can make this work, it's Amazon, because they don't need the money, but they can spend the money.
And you're a pretty big football fan, I would say. Were you happy with their telecasts this year on the football side of things?
Yeah. I think they were solid. And they also, I mean, paid a lot of money to get like really high profile broadcasters as well. So I think they're definitely willing to make the most out of that investment. So I wouldn't be surprised if they do something similar with the NBA. If they might even try to poach some people from, you know, TNT.
Oh yeah. Why would you not have Shaq and Barkley?
If TNT loses the rights, because they have, I mean, Bill, correct me if I'm wrong, but TNT has the single best broadcasting team for the NBA.
Well, it's really, correct? Yeah, it's really also their like studio team. That's where they get a lot. It's Shaq, it's Barkley. It's that one guy. I always forget his name. He's like kind of like the quarterback of everything. Kenny Smith. So if TNT loses the rights, like it's going to be a bidding war, especially for Shaq and Barkley, because those two guys always butt heads and they make a lot. There's a lot of good content there. Like, that's a big draw for that show. Like, there's going to be bidding rights for that team. And they probably will come as a package. They'll probably come as, like, a foursome. They'll probably be like, all right, you have to take all four of us. And then, of course, you have Mike Breen, who's one of the greatest, you know, one of the great NBA announcers of all time. He'll get he'll be, you know, there'll be a high ticket value for him as well, because he's big time.
TNT hasn't lost the rights yet. It's worth noting. They have, as an existing rights holder, they have a chance to beat anyone's offer. And these are only framework deals. There's a lot that can happen between now and the final closing of the bell. Other big competitors here include NBC, who has been really trying to get those NBA rights. They had a very popular franchise of NBA on NBC in like the 80s, right? They were like kind of the home of the NBA for a long time. Yeah. And so there's been a lot of, especially around the idea of having the games on Peacock. Peacock has been really building out their sports portfolio. NBA would really be a big feather in their cap, pun intended. We definitely see them not being counted out. But it does, and also the thing I kept hearing about, and I'm very curious what will happen with this, the NBA has this thing called the in-season tournament, which they started, I believe, this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's designed exclusively, like, with the main intention of being broken out and selling the rights to that separately from these other things. Like, they wanted to kind of have this bonus sort of broadcast deal that they could squeeze extra money out of their broadcasting partners. And the rumor for a long time has been that Netflix is very interested in that. They really would like to own that. They could turn it into this sort of like, you know, Netflix cup of the NBA and have it be a really branded experience that feels special and not just like, okay, Netflix finally caved and decided to just bid on a sports package, because for a very long time the company has said, we are not bidding for sports because sports is way overpriced and it's a drain on our budget, and we will not do that. We will do sports entertainment. We will have lots of sports adjacent content, but we're not going to waste money on a sports broadcast deal. So this would kind of let them kind of dip their toe into it without actually having to totally backtrack. But I'm curious if that's on the table now, given that this Amazon deal seems to be much larger than what initially was expected. It seemed like for a long time people thought Amazon was basically going to get a small slice of this this broadcast package. And by this early reporting, it seems like it's actually quite a bit larger, including playoff games, which is huge. So, Bill, any other thoughts on all that stuff?
Yeah, so Disney, one of the big ones, ABC, ESPN, what they'll get is they're probably going to hold on to the rights for the Christmas Day games, because those are big ratings getters, big time ratings getters. Just like that's kind of why the NFL has games on Christmas too, because they want a piece of that pie too, because everyone's home, TV's on in the background. I think like the big loser, the one who could be left without a chair when the music stops, is Warner Bros. Discovery. Because there's been stuff said in the media where it's just like, ooh, buddy, what are you doing? Because I really think Disney, but the thing that confuses me is the whole Super Sports Hulu thing, like how that they're involved in, like, and Disney's involved in, but Disney's trying to make a deal. It's so confusing. It really is. I just don't get how that's the monkey wrench in all this. If that wasn't there, I would say, yeah, Disney's getting part. I'd say Amazon's getting a big part. And then I say the whatever's left over is going to NBC, because the NBC is going to throw a lot of money at that. Because people don't realize, like, yeah, you know, game 30 is like isn't going to do crazy ratings, but the playoffs they are insanely popular, and especially now you have like the Knicks don't suck, so you have that New York audience they're doing well. So I mean, there are two seeds, so you're going to get, like, more people to watch.
How long is that going to last?
Hey, listen, it'll get, you know, they used to not even be relevant. So you didn't really have the New York market there. And the Brooklyn Nets I'm not a big basketball guy either, but I know the Brooklyn Nets don't have that lion's share of the New York market, even though they want it. When the Knicks are relevant, that means something. So if you're going to see these ratings for these playoff games are big. So they're going to want in on that. And I could just see Warner Bros. Discovery just losing out, and they better pay AEW a lot of money to fill that time, because That's a lot of their programming.
Yeah, I
better
think
they
that,
could just show the accountant 100 more times.
I think it would be a short-term loss, long win for Warner Brothers Discovery if they did not get the NBA package, because they need to continue to reduce their debt so they can merge with
That's
another
true.
Company, preferably, in Zaslav's opinion, preferably Comcast. If that's going to happen, having this deal is going to make that harder, not easier. So I think that they'd get a lot of really bad headlines for a couple of weeks that they lost out. They were outbid. And then I think long-term it would probably be much better for their viability and their long-term strategies that they've been playing at for a while. So I'll be curious to see how that goes. I guess, you know, we're just a couple of guys talking about this stuff, right? We don't have any inside information. We're just like reading the same news everyone else is. But Josh, I'm curious what you think in terms of NBC really aggressively pursuing this, but with the news that maybe ABC has secured the finals, do you think that a broadcaster, a mainstream broadcaster like NBC, would be less inclined to go after those playoff games knowing that they cannot get any piece of the finals? If they're not selling off partial rights to the finals, does NBC want to be the second tier broadcast company to have NBA rights, or is just getting a piece of what is a young demographic skewing sports live audience, you know, with huge stars, most stars out of any sport from what I've been told, is that worth it for NBC, do you think?
It would depend if they get other playoff games. Like if it's just regular season for them, then that deal is probably not worth it. As Bill mentioned, the Christmas Day games, those do huge for them, but like the typical regular season NBA games are, I mean, they don't do bad by any means, but they're just a little bit more middle of the road. It's really once you get to the playoffs that the anticipation builds and you start to get a really strong audience. So if NBC could get at least like the Eastern Conference or Western Conference finals, like that would make a difference. Like that would definitely, I think, be enough for them to go for it.
I just like to piggyback on that too, is that like, if you look at what Warner Brothers Discovery has with the baseball playoffs, like Fox has the World Series, but they get the playoffs on like TBS and stuff like that. So, I mean, and those ratings are big. Like playoffs matter, but like, yeah, so if they got the finals, like Josh is saying, even if it's one conference, that's still big. Like if you got LeBron versus Steph Curry in the Western Conference finals, people are going to tune in large numbers.
And they might hold on to their Peacock subscription to do it.
Yeah. I mean, look,
because something that we learned from the NFL season last year, that NFL playoff game that Peacock had, they were actually surprisingly effective at retention, at least according to their own reports that they released. Like it seemed like they really were able to hook a lot more people than a lot of skeptics thought. Many people thought, okay, get people to sign up for 1 month and everybody's going to leave. And it seems like they really did retain a substantial portion of those people, at least for the next month or two. And that's huge when it comes to getting people through the door, making that long-term investment worthwhile. So you definitely see that being part of the appeal for NBC. I'll be curious to see how this goes. The NBA is definitely the most valuable it's the most valuable sport for a demographic that is much more inclined to watch things on streaming.
Yes.
I think the NFL obviously is a bigger sport in terms of raw ratings, but a lot fewer people are going to be complaining about the NBA being on Amazon than we're complaining about the NFL being on Amazon. And a lot of more people are going to be excited. But with some of my friends who are big NBA fans who are in their 30s, and the response was, great, let it be on Amazon. The easier it is for me to stream these games, the better. And I know that's not what a lot of NFL fans were saying, but the demographics for NFL viewership a lot higher than NBA. So I think that has a lot to do with it. So it'll be interesting. Also, like, you know, in terms of like everybody goes to one place to watch an NFL game, right? You all go to a bar. I feel like NBA, it's much more casual. It's not really as eventized. So that probably has something to do with it, too. So I'll be curious to see how it goes. I think it's going to line straight into our next segment, though, where we're going to talk about the streaming wars. Of course, in addition to all of this news around sports, we had a lot of kind of big releases this month. We had some potential acquisitions going on, being rumored in the press. So with all that in mind, Josh, I'm going to start with you again, because I didn't hear from you at all last month, so I want to make sure you are fully accounted for in all of your thoughts and feelings. Who do you think won this month?
I had a full extra month and I still don't know who to pick. No, I do think I know who I'm going to pick. I feel like it's a lazy answer, but I'm going to go with Netflix. Solely because, I mean, we've talked about Netflix is always the behemoth, even if we don't necessarily mention them. But I do think they've had some really strong showings this past month. I know you guys talked about the three-body problem last month, and while the buzz around that has definitely died down a bit, it still did really well. Like, I was looking at the numbers, at least from Nielsen, had over a billion minutes, which was, like, well above anything else that they had listed for last year or last month when it came to original shows. In addition, I mean, they've got other ones that, while maybe not as buzzy, still did really well. Like, you have The Gentlemen with yep. Theo James has been pretty popular. You have the show that you mentioned earlier, Alex, Baby Reindeer, which really thought that was a Rudolph, you know, spinoff, but apparently very different.
Different vibe.
Oh, it's horrifyingly different.
Yeah.
Yeah, so little worried, but apparently that's been, you know, really big hit for them. Also, another show that we talked about earlier, Ripley, has gotten very strong reviews. And then over on the reality TV front, they've gotten really good buzz from some of their shows, like their cooking or baking shows have done really well, like Is It Cake, as well as The Circle came back this month, and apparently he was getting lots of viewers. And then beyond that, I first didn't see it as good news, but I do see it as now a sign of Netflix dominance, was something that you shared with us, Alex, outside of this, that Netflix is going to stop sharing its subscription numbers next year and solely focus on the minutes of content that is consumed. And again, at first, I was like, well, that seems weird. They're kind of like pulling the football away like Charlie Brown and Lucy. But no, they're just deciding that actually, we play by our own rules, and it doesn't matter what you guys do. We will dictate this, and you'll follow us, or you just won't. It doesn't matter. Like, we're so far ahead of everyone else that, again, this is really the standard that we can set. And, you know, if you don't like it, too bad. So I think that is just a bold, somewhat arrogant, but I think well-earned move from Netflix that they could do that.
I concur. But I don't concur strongly enough, because they are not my winner for the month. My winner is Disney. I've just been the winner in my personal home, in the sense that I've had very little time to watch TV, and almost all of it has been on Disney Plus this month, because I've been watching Shogun religiously. I've been watching X-Men 97 religiously. And guys, guess what? The final season of The Bad Batch is actually really good, and I've been watching it and really enjoying it. So that's been like my two-hour block of Disney Plus that I watch every Wednesday night, and it's been a lot of fun for the last month. So that's like personally big deal. Also, secret surprise Bluey episodes coming out. I obviously don't watch Bluey, but lots of other people do, and they were really sad and emotional about this. We got some great Bluey coverage on thepopbreak.com. Randy Elaine been doing excellent written content over there about Bluey. We got a Bill Bodkin hosted Bluey podcasting event coming next month that I'm just going to subtly tease. It's going to be really cool.
I already got the wheels turning.
So Bluey popping out, really big deal. And the thing that's most important, I think, this month, they did this soft launch a couple months ago of being like, oh, if you subscribe to Hulu, now Hulu shows are going to be on Disney Plus. And they did the soft launch, and we were all kind of like, oh, okay, well, that's like, now there's a little square and you can watch some Hulu shows on it. Well, this past month, they did the full launch, and it's a whole different ballgame, because really what it is, if you log into Disney Plus now, it's a fully integrated experience, as long as you have Hulu subscription, where all this stuff is mixed in together, and it is a really, really excellent offering. It really is, in my opinion, just the best streaming service out there right now in terms of quality shows across demographics, across IP and prestige and all of that stuff. Like, getting to watch Shogun and X-Men 97 on the same streamer in the same moment, like, there's no other streamer that's giving me that range of content that's still at that level right now. So it's just, it's doing a lot, and FX being now Disney Plus, that, like, they are having an incredible run, rivaling the very best eras of HBO at this point, when you look at some of the great stuff that they have going. And HBO a little bit on the down low right now in terms of things. You know, we're excited for House of the Dragon to come back, but that's more of the Game of Thrones thing than a, you know, HBO thing. So I think that, you know, FX is ascendant as part of Disney Plus, really big deal. I think we got really good state of Marvel. We got really good stuff coming with Star Wars, especially we got the Tales of the Empire happening soon. That's exciting. And again, it was a little disrespectful. Bluey is here. Bill, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you said it way smarter than me, as always. I think Disney Plus had the best month.
Except because, when I tried to talk about Bluey.
Well, I could give it a little bit more. So, I mean, The Sign was the global premiere of this episode. It's like, it was a huge event because if people don't know, and obviously I watch it a lot, is Bluey is one of the most highest streamed, it's the highest streamed thing on Disney Plus. And so, but we're on a delay here in America, everything coming over to, it's an Australian show. So they get it first. And I think the UK gets it. Then we get it. There's even some episodes that would sneak onto Amazon too, but them doing the global premiere was huge. Apparently it was like 10 million, like at like 10 million, it was streamed like 10 million times within under a week. This one episode, which is one of the biggest streamed episodes Disney Plus has ever done. And then you just combine the three episodes that kind of popped out at the same time. You know, they have billions of minutes of television. If Netflix wants to do that, Disney Plus flex their muscles right back and say, hey, within three episodes, we've got billions of minutes just from these three episodes. And I think that was huge. It was on terrestrial TV as well, but that was big. Again, the Hulu integration, I think, has gone really well. It reminds me of when I was in Europe and Hotstar was providing things and everything was mixed together. It was awesome. So I'm really glad it's here in the States. I don't have it yet, but I will. So Shogun, obviously being part of that, is massive, and that retained its ratings. Like, that was an article I think Variety or Hollywood Reporter put out there. It was just the staying power of this show in terms of its streaming numbers was huge. And that doesn't often happen, especially what was it, 10 episodes? So
10 episodes, so often, weekly drops. I mean, that's a long-term commitment.
It is. I mean, I know, if you're an old head like me, it's just like, yeah, I mean, this is what we used to do, right? You know, you get 22 episodes of Frasier, you know, just because my father-in-law watches it all the time. Show I always reference.
And because it's like one of the best sitcoms that's ever existed.
Oh, yeah, that too. No, and, you know, or like Law and Order. It's like 20 episodes per year. It's a, you know, or plus. Dun, dun. It's like an hour. Yeah. And so it's like, to have that is huge. X-Men 97 has been just been the water cooler show of the spring. It really has. It's been an excellent show. People are already, people have got the faith restored in Marvel based off of this show. People are going to DC saying, hey, when are you gonna do this for us now, please? So I think that does mean something. And the Star Wars stuff is huge. But they're also doing a little bit with integration within the parks as well. I saw this pop up recently where on Pixar movies, they're showing like, hey, it's Pixar Fest now at Disneyland. Here, click here to buy tickets. You know what I mean? So they're using not just with merchandise, they're using with parks. They're using trying to integrate everything into a synergy, which I think no other real – I mean, Peacock could with Universal, but – they haven't done it yet. So to be able to do that, I think, is like a tool that
Amazon is the streamer that is doing it the most.
But there's no
Amazon name. Right. Yeah. But in terms of merchandising and pushing that sort of like shop through our streamer to access cool new stuff, like it's a two way game between Amazon and Disney. And Disney has such a stronger relationship with the viewers and customers, as it were, that I think it's definitely yielding more consistent results, at least earlier.
I wouldn't be stunned if you see some show, what they're doing to shop Disney, or they start doing to say like, hey, our partners in Target, click here or through Disney Plus and get this sort of discount. Like, it's going to come. I think they'll have synergy through that. That's another revenue stream for them. I think Disney Plus, like last year, and Disney in general, was a bit on the ropes. And I think 2024 has shown like that turn is coming, and we have D23 on the horizon. And I think bigger things for Disney are coming within the next few years, especially, you know, because obviously the writer's strike pushed everything back. But I think we're going to see Disney Plus will be spoken about more highly, I think, this year, especially on this show, than in last year, because last year was not a good year for them. So yeah, Disney Plus this month.
You know, it's Disney Plus and Netflix, just kind of like neck and neck. Can Amazon come out on top next month? We'll find out. Maybe if that NBA news works out. We'll see.
Oh, I think they win it hands down. It's a slam dunk if they get the deal, guys. It's a slam dunk.
Well, I think that's got to be the final word on that. So we're going to move straight on to our last segment.
I don't know how you keep me on the show.
For gem moments like that.
That's why.
We got a new series spotlight where we talk about our new series and give a spotlight to it. Okay, so this month we're going to be reviewing Boy Detectives, Netflix's adaptation of the comic book characters created by Neil Gaiman and Matt Wagner. The series is created by Supernatural and the flight attendant writer Steve Yockey. It stars George Rexdrew and Jaden Reverie as titular Dead Boy Detectives, and Cassius Nelson as their new psychic friend, Crystal Palace. I watched one episode. Bill, you watched one episode, right? Josh, how many episodes did you watch?
One episode.
Ooh, okay, half an episode.
Yeah. Okay.
Half an episode, interesting. That's either good news or bad news. That either means, like, you wanted to keep going, or you were like, oh, God, I can't get through this.
We'll just have to find out. Keep the audience. We'll have to draw the sign a little bit.
Josh, I promise that I would start with you at every segment this month, so please tell us what you think about the Dead Boy Detectives. First of all, do you have any relationship with this property? It's a DC property. This originally started out off of the Doom Patrol. These characters had a brief arc on the Doom Patrol. But then it got rebooted in development and moved over from Max to Netflix and is now technically part of the Sandman DC universe over on Netflix. Do you have any familiarity with any of this stuff? Or is this you're coming to the Dead Boys fresh?
Well, I've never been dead or detective, so I've got one of the three going. So that's my familiarity so far with it.
I feel like you really were never like a pint-sized detective with like a little pocket magnifying glass.
I could see you
like,
and Aaron
9 years old.
As like a modern-day Hardy Boys out where you were, wherever you're from. Pennsylvania? I don't know. Maryland? I keep getting it wrong.
Delaware? It's a tiny state.
It's in between the two.
Yeah. Detective work. I love Batman. Does that count as detective work?
Delaware Boy Detectives. Yeah.
There you go.
Delaware Boy Detectives. Yeah.
That's a spin-off series of this, actually? The spin-off of the spin-off?
You could write a YA series of novels right now titled that, and they would do
gangbusters. You know what? We should actually rename Anniversary Brothers the Delaware Boy Detectives podcast.
Okay, you heard it here first, everyone. So when you first told me about this show, Alex, I was like, this is weird, and I think you would just describe it, and you had to give a disclaimer. It was like, this is not about detective service for, like, dead boys. It's
yes.
Dead boy
it's
ghosts.
It's not about serial killers who kill dead boys, yeah.
So thank you for clarifying that, because at first, like, what are we getting into this month? And then I saw some of the promo material for it, and then I saw that it was by Greg Berlanti was involved, who you already mentioned earlier. And it's like, oh, yeah, this feels straight from the CW. Like, this is, you know, they're just like, okay, we can throw in a few F-bombs and maybe make it a little bit more, like, edgy. But otherwise, like, oh, yeah, like, this would be right there with, you know, all of the Arrowverse shows and Supernatural that you already mentioned and the fever dream that is Riverdale. It's like, yes, this feels like that.
Yeah.
But not in a bad way. I was a fan of the first episode. I think they did a good job of establishing the characters, making it playful between them. I like the banter. It does very much feel like Supernatural, but with, you know, these ghost boys. They even have one of the actresses from Supernatural showing up at the very end of the episode as the... I think the night nurse, the one who's going to try to hunt them down for not gone to the afterlife. So there's a lot of DNA from the CW in this. But again, I don't think that's a bad thing. So I don't know. I might watch more of it. I'm actually somewhat intrigued. It's not like a slam dunk for me, but we'll see.
Phil, did this one land the three-pointer for you?
Boom shakalaka. It's a little NBA Jam reference for anyone who doesn't know. I didn't even watch the trailer for this. I just kept seeing the name, and I'm like, oh, yeah, well, I'll get to it. But I know the current Dead Boy Detective Comics is written by someone we've interviewed on Socially Distanced, Porn Shack Pachote, who did The Good Asian, which is being developed for HBO or Max. I don't know which one. And he has Man's Best, which is a new comic series that's out right now. He's involved in it. So I'm like, okay, well, he's got really good taste. He's a cool guy. So this has to be somewhat all right. And like within the first 5 minutes, I'm like, oh, this is so my shit right here. It's just like wanky British humor, like supernatural shit going on, just like let's have adventures and mysteries. I'm like, great, I'm in. I'm totally in. I didn't watch much of the CW stuff at all, as I think is well known, and I'm not doing Bill versus the Arrowverse, Alex. I can only do so many jokes. So
it would be so cruel of me to even ask.
It would take 50. I would be 75 by the time we got to the end of Arrow alone. So
imagine it's, the immaculate spreadsheet that I would have made for us.
Oh, yeah, that would be the fucking highlight of the whole thing. Is just watching you put it on a shared Google Doc. It'd be great. It's about as much joy as I can. But I kid. No offense to anyone who loved the Arrowverse, Alex and Josh, and I think Eric.
It was just us three. We were the only ones.
That's it.
No one else.
Nobody. No, Marissa liked a couple seasons of Arrow. I give her that. But yeah, I was surprised at how well this worked for me. I was just like, wow, this is just, because I thought Sandman, like when I watched it in the beginning, I was like, okay, yeah, this is fun. I watched the whole series. I'm like, I like this. And as time, that's like 2 years ago at this point, I seem to like it less and less when I think about it. I'm like, this was, it was all right. Didn't really stick to the ribs. There's nothing about it that I loved, but they brought the character of Death back into episode one, and she was one of my favorite characters from the series, from Sandman, and I was like, okay. And the way she has this dialogue with this one character is just so awesome, and I'm just like, oh, this is way more than I thought I was getting into. I really, really like this. I like, this is a cool hangout show, and I got through half of the second episode because I had to go to Target and get food, you know, like for my family.
Okay.
So I probably after this podcast will at least dive back into the second episode and finish it, and maybe even try and get into the third episode, because it's just a fun show. I mean, it's dark and scary and morbid at times too, but it's just like, again, it's this weird, quirky show that has like the hyper caffeinated Guy Ritchie, Sam Raimi, Edgar Wright editing that I like. And I think there's so much to uncover and dig into that I'm excited to see where it goes. I mean, could it end up being a huge dumpster fire by the end? Sure. But, you know, I don't think it will be. I think I'm having a lot of fun with it. And my goal is to finish more than one show that we recommended on this show, on this podcast for when we get to December. So far, I got Percy Jackson done. So, hey, I'm the one. I really want to finish this one off. It's just the leads have such great chemistry, and it goes into some different places in episode two, which I'm really excited for them to explore. Especially how they ended up dead.
Well,
I think that's a fun mystery. Alex, what did you think?
Guys, I'm just so happy that you guys had such a good time with this show, because I hated it so much. Oh,
you curmudgeonly bastard.
I hated it so much.
Tennis players? You're just like, bah!
I mean, I thought this was terrible. I thought it was awful. I think it's one of the worst shows we've watched, honestly. I hated it so much.
That jazz show was so bad.
The other Luca Guadagnino.
No, he loved the Luca Guadagnino show. But I mean, like, come on, we watched that weird one with, like, J.K. Simmons sort of being, like, the fucking universe in his...
I mean, that was beautiful. Well, that was, like, a great... like hour that made no sense as a TV show, but at least it was something. It was an experience I'll never forget. I'll forget this tomorrow.
Mr. I thought this was so bad. That was god awful.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. Maybe it's not the single worst thing that we've ever watched. We have a surprisingly low bar for that, or high bar.
I guess it was bad.
But I did not like this show, guys. I thought that the chemistry was non-existent. I thought these actors were so forced. They were so extra. Everything felt pitched to like a young adult audience to me. It felt like the kind of like message of the week, sort of like you know, Crystal Palace is having a moment of crisis, and she has to learn a tough lesson from an elder friend of hers that everybody cares about their own stuff, and everyone is actually selfish. And I'm just like, well, if you were 11, that would seem really profound. I don't know. I just really hate the show. I think that Jaden Reverie is a good actor who was really trying to do a lot in a positive sense, trying to salvage a lot of the scenes that he was in. He's got a natural charisma. I really like his vibe. I think he could be good in a lot of different things. I thought that George Rextrew, no offense, it was terrible. He's just going so big, so broad, totally off tone with what it seems like they're going for. It seemed like a total mismatch in not a great way. I thought that the Crystal Palace stuff, it felt very not interesting to me at all, I gotta say. And it really felt like a CW show on rails to me. And it's like, this just feels like giving me something that I've seen 100 times before and better in all of those installments. So I just really didn't like this. And, you know, to add insult to injury, I was a watcher of Doom Patrol when they had their Dead Boy Detectives episode. And I really liked that trio of Ty Tennant, Sebastian Croft, and Madeline Horsher. They had great chemistry. They were light on their feet. There was like a nice mix of melancholy and silly, which I think is what they're going for here too. And there's just like no comparison, in my opinion. And, you know, I haven't seen Madeline Horsher in things since then, but Ty Tennant and Sebastian Croft have both popped up in a bunch of different things, and they've been very well received. And so I'm not surprised to see them not carry over to this show. But I think it's like a major loss as a result, because I think that those three performers could handle the material much better. And I think that the material that they got in that one episode of Doom Patrol, which is a surprisingly silly and fun and heartfelt show, matched much better the energy that I think they were going for than what we got here, which just, I don't know, it just felt very much like a YA show in a bad way. And I'm not above watching a YA show. I'm doing, you know, weekly recaps of an X-Men cartoon right now. I'm not too good for anything, but it just feels like a show that I've seen 100 times before, and nothing is notable except that it's got really good production value in the first episode. It definitely has a good budget. They're dropping F-bombs. They seem really excited to be able to do that. I'm very happy for them. But otherwise, I don't know. It just really felt like, you know, I'm glad you guys had fun. I just really did not like this show. I will not be watching further episodes.
Do you say that?
No,
but I feel like you are.
There's so much that I have to catch up on, and this is not anywhere on the list, so I'm sorry. I don't think it's happening. I mean, maybe if I hear that the second season that it's coming back for a second season, the second season is improved, I might give this another shot, but I just found this to be so bad.
I really wouldn't be surprised if this pops off. This has the campy dark feel of Wednesday.
I don't think it'll reach the dizzying heights of that. Because that thing was a cultural phenomenon.
No, I don't think it can hit that heights, but I think it can get plenty of that audience back.
Yeah. I liked Wednesday. Like people, I liked it a lot.
The sort of, like, you may also like Dead Boy Detective Agency. Like, there's definitely... That's definitely what they're going for.
It's just Dead Boy Detective. And that's fine. It's like, not like Pop Break Pro Wrestling Presents, you know?
It's just... Dead Boy Detective Agency sounds so much better than Dead Boy Detectives in my mind. I don't know why. Am I alone on this?
I mean, it doesn't bother me that much.
You just hate the show, Alex. We know. We understand.
I have to say, so when I got to the second episode, what was your problem with, oh, Christ, George? No. Is that the right guy? Fuck.
Edwin?
Who's the one who died first?
Yeah.
Who was the old fancy
guy? Yeah, Edwin. George is the actor. Edwin is the character. Yeah. I just think that he's just so over the top. And part of this is the writing and part of it is the performance. I don't entirely blame the actor. Just like, he meets this girl and he's like, oh, I can't possibly, because I was in hell. It's just like so ridiculous. Like, tone it down like 7 notches, please, and then I might care about you. It's just so extra.
Okay.
In a way that it feels like I'm watching like a Nickelodeon like sitcom, you know?
First
like,
off,
I'm playing for 11-year-olds. Like,
until you watch 2 seasons of the Nickelodeon show House of Anubis, you can't talk because that shit is fucking painful, and I had to watch that.
Coming to Saturday Morning Adventures this fall, never. Bill Botkin on House of Anubis.
You just want me to scream into the void for an hour. Just like that. No, but so in episode two, they definitely take this character, and he is toned down more, I think. So far in the half the episode.
Yeah, it's because friendship is important. Like, that's how I feel like this show is, like, pitched. It's like, it's important to have friends and to not always yell at them. Like, thank you so much. Like, that's the vibe that I was getting when I was watching it.
Yeah, no, I understand. But no, I think they do some things in episode two which are interesting with that character that kind of changed the dynamic. Once I finish it, I'll let you know if it's still the same.
Sure. Well, and okay, so speaking of shows that you have watched for this podcast, Percy Jackson absolutely is a show that's pitched towards a younger audience. And I watched it every week, and I thought that it had something to return to, because the acting felt sincere, the characters felt like real people, and yeah, there's a little bit of a, like, I learned an important lesson this week, and it was also somehow related to Greek mythology, and, like, that's the whole deal, and that's fine, because that's the type of show it was. But it felt like I was watching real characters with real relationships, and I was able to invest in them, even if I wasn't the target demographic. This, I don't feel that way at all. I found these characters to be annoying and to be way too try hard and to just be, like, so exacerbating. And I was just, like, not into it.
Well, also, Percy Jackson had a hot mom.
I mean, that wasn't so much for me as for you, but I'm happy that that was there.
I just couldn't let it go.
Josh, I'm going to give you the last word, because you're going to have the nice thing to say about why I'm wrong.
I mean, I see what you're saying, Alex, and I don't disagree with it. I think it is an incredibly campy show, and I know you're not above camp. I know there are campy shows that you love, Alex, but I think they're just parts of it that just don't work for you, and that's okay, Alex. You know what? No judgment.
Wow. There's so much judgment in that not judgment.
He's not mad. He's disappointed. That's what that is. Oh, shit. I pulled that a few times. That's okay, Alex. You don't have to watch it. It's your prerogative. Fuck. That's worse than anything I could have said.
I guess. Absolutely. Thanks so much, like, Josh.
I'm so sorry. He's like stabs you, and then puts, like, lemon juice in the wound. He's like, that's fine. Alex, so is this show dead to you?
It is absolutely dead to me. Boy. Except that Dead to Me is an excellent show on Netflix that had three beautiful seasons, and everyone should watch that instead if you haven't, because it's great. Christina Applegate, Linda Cardellini, true national treasures. You should watch that instead of this. Bill, where can people find your stuff?
Check me out on thepopbreak.com. We've been doing this for 15 years, and thank you for everyone who's been along on this journey, especially Josh and Alex, who put up with me for a long time. If you have some written work up there, you can check out my monthly Pop 5 column is up. This month I talk about Marvel's Gang War arc. I talk about wrestling, because I always do. And I also talk about the notion of self-care. Because I kind of just hijacked one of parts of my column to talk about just, like, mental health and how I burned myself out so hard in April. And I really have to learn how to take better care of myself. And I think people could take a note from that, too, because it's a lot that we do every day. And when we go through, and it's time to take care of ourselves, and self-care isn't just a spa day or buying yourself something fun to eat or a new T-shirt. It's like taking care of yourself. And I think that's an important concept. Other than that, if you wanted me to listen to me talk about silly things, check out Socially Distanced, which drops every single Friday. We had the motherfucking Bridgerton episode of all Bridgerton episodes last week. Alex was with us. Like we said at the beginning, the C-bomb was dropped in a very nonchalant way that was amazing. I did the whole intro in an accent. It was wild. This week we're doing, it's our May the 4th episode. So we're actually reviewing, I haven't watched this in so long, The Phantom Menace 25th anniversary. Mm-hmm. So I'm rewatching that bullshit. And we also watched Tales of the Jedi in anticipation of Tales of the Empire, which is going to be released this week. And then we'll be doing our football episode following that in the following week. Check out Bill versus the MCU with me and Alex. We're in our Extreme X Watch. We did our Disney discount double check discarded double feature as we talk about New Mutants and X-Men Dark Phoenix. This coming month, we're in the Wolverine trio. We're going to be talking about X-Men Origins Wolverine, which I can tell you did not probably get any better since we first watched it because it's a large piece of shit. The Wolverine, which I've never seen, and then Logan, which was nominated for an Oscar. I will be talking about that this month, and I'm sure I have to watch them all this week because I don't read calendars, and I'm sure we're recording this weekend. So follow Pop Break on all forms of social media at The Pop Break, except for YouTube. We are at popbreak.com, and I also have a review of Fallout I wrote as well. Go check that out. Josh, Delaware Boy Detectives, where can people find you, and what are you doing on the internet?
Oh, man. So people can find me on the Anniversary Brothers podcast, which is now also on this behemoth of a podcast network we have, The Pop Break. No longer two separate podcasts, but one union. And we recently talked about the 25th anniversary of Digimon, Bill's favorite show, I've heard. As well as we did talk about a Marvel movie, actually. We talked about the 10th anniversary of Captain America, The Winter Soldier. If people enjoy listening to Bill versus the MCU, I would highly encourage them to go check out that episode. It was a lot of fun, and I got to talk about my own kind of personal history with that film. So had a great time talking about it with Aaron. And people can also find me on the Anime Pop podcast with my co-host, Amanda Rivas. This past month, we talked about Go-Go Loser Ranger and Kaiju Number 8. And yes, I promise you, that's a real thing. Go-Go Loser Ranger.
I know.
Had a lot of fun. And we are going to have an extra special episode this coming month. We're going to have the host of Blurred Watchers join us to talk about My Hero Academia. So going to be a fun month for us, and definitely encourage people to check that out.
Yeah. Okay. So first, I just have to say, I listened to your Digimon episode and it truly wounded my heart because I loved Digimon so much as a kid. It was one of my favorite shows, and you guys were just consistently, this is mid, and it just like really hurt. So, I hope you know that you ruined
I'm
my
so
day.
Sorry.
Thank you.
So was Midimon. I killed him. Ah, I did it.
Follow me on Letterboxd at Media Thinkings. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Alex Marquez. Josh's podcast, he didn't mention, not only is it only in one feed now, but it's every other Thursday now. It's nice and easy to keep up with. It's Sharing Thursdays with not couple goals. Every other Thursday, you're going to have something from Aaron and Josh. It's going to be wonderful. Every week, you'll have something from Josh because he is the official all-star of this podcasting network, which we love. As for me, you can find me all the places that Bill said already. Please check out Saturday Morning Adventures. Me and Kay are having a great time doing that. We're down to the final stretch. There's only the 3-part season finale left, so the next 3 weeks are going to be wild from what we've heard. I can't wait to get into it with him and have you all listen. You can check me out on Social Distance Bridgerton episode because I absolutely, despite having no time, watched 16 episodes of Bridgerton this week. and it was a mixed bag, but season 2 is really good. So I would recommend at least that much. But definitely listen to the episode because it's a lot of fun. We talk about death by rain. We talk about death by bee. We talk about lots of different things. And it's wonderful. So yeah, just check out all that stuff. Just go to thepopbreak.com, click on the podcast tab, check out all the podcasts that we have. So many great things happening, including this one. And yeah, I hope you enjoy the new feed because we've been planning this for months and it's very exciting to have all of my friends in one place. And it's going to be a big party for you guys. 5 to 6 episodes a week, one spot. It's going to be great. So until next month, we are going to see you later. Bye.